I'm sat here in the Matthew Mantle's kitchen in rural Devon. You might be surprised to learn he's a professional punter that bets in running from home. Matthew, can you tell us a bit about you and how you manage that?
Well, I started out very young in racing, introduced to it by an elder brother, and was betting probably by the age of about 11 most Saturdays, and graduated from that to be a fairly standard, regular losing betting shop punter, but always fanatical about my racing for a number of years, and that really remained the case until in-running betting came along, which I started in 2002, I think. I opened a Betfair account and started soon after in 2003. Have been doing it professionally now since 2004, so 13 years. I started out originally in a trading office. It was one of the few places that had the equipment and the pictures, because in those days, the racing channels and what have you, I'm not even sure I had Sky and things at home in those days. With the advent of Racing UK and Leslie at the races with their delays, but that's another story, started doing it from home. The rest is history.
So, dare we ask, what are your tactics? As most people sitting here will think, you can't possibly win at home. You've got armies of people at the course, you've got people in training rooms. How can you possibly win from home?
Well, there's a like most things, there's a narrative, isn't it? There's the story. Don't bet in running. You know, there's people miles in front of you. They're seeing things a furlong in front of you. They've all got the high tech equipment. They're at the track. You're just throwing money to the sharks. You can't possibly win. And there is some truth in that. If you know, in running betting for you is, you know, they're coming up to the line, that one's going to win. Then yeah, certainly if you're watching on at the races, you're about 7 seconds behind live, which is, you know, at least half a furlong, so yeah, you're not going to win. But there are, firstly, different delays. You can watch the same tracks through Betfair Live Video, which is about 2.5 seconds behind live, something like that. Racing UK is about 1.5 seconds behind live, neither of which are ideal. I would love a level playing field. But if you're doing things more subtly, if you're race reading rather than, as I say, they're coming up to the line, that one's going to win, then there are still opportunities, and nothing, there's nothing like in running betting for the types of value that you get. You might, you know, if you're a punter, a market goes up, you think, well, that horse is 14s, you know, I'd make it an 8-10 to 1 shot, but the kind of value you get in running, you're never going to find in other books. I'm trying to think of famous example. You have Duvan, for example, in last year's Queen Mother Champion Chase, went off 5s on 6s on. And after 2 or 3 fences, it's hit a couple, it's not travelling with its usual fluency. What price should it be? There's no, you know, the bookies for a normal market, after a while, everything comes into line, people agree, the market agrees what it should be. For something like that, it's completely up in the air. So this horse, you know, which isn't travelling as it normally does after 3 or 4 fences, it started 5s on, what price should it be? Should it be 2 to 7 now? Should it be evens? Should it be 5 to 1? Should it be 10 to 1? There are opportunities there, and clearly that's a high profile and an interesting example, but there are opportunities all the time when prices are so far out of whack that you would just never find in a conventional market. And quite often, as I say, if you're dealing with the delay, then things that are happening further out are obviously what you're more interested in.
So would you put in a lot of homework? Do you need to know each horse's idiosyncrasies and characteristics? So are you prepared before each race that you know more than people just watching with no knowledge would know?
Yeah, you have. I pretty well work 7 days a week, so I have a fairly good library of knowledge. But, you know, there are horses that you're learning about all the time. There are others. In the early days, it was probably fairly simplistic on Betfair. You know, if something's cruising, everybody wants on. If something's struggling, everybody wants to lay it. After a while, people learn, oh, Archibald, you know, he cruises along, and then and you know, the market very soon catches up with that. But in less famous examples, that then, you know, there's still opportunities to be had. And in types of races, in maiden races, things like that, you know, you might have sharper, speedier types who know their job, from Richard Hannon Yard, someone like that. You might have bigger, backward types who are learning on the job, from John Gosden or somebody like that. So horses who seemingly are going nowhere in a maiden, you might want to back at a big price if you think you're seeing signs that the penny's dropping in running. There are so many ways. And you read anybody who's written any articles or done anything, any advice you see in the Racing Post or anything like that, is what you back to lay, lay to back. You know, you can lay things. I have things I call kind of definitive lays, where I think, right, you're not going to win, and just lay it and leave it, and you're either right or you're wrong. Other things are more trading positions. You might think, you know, maybe lay a novice hurdle a first time up, you know, give it a couple of hurdles, see if it can jump or what have you. Lay a horse you think is going to be outpaced and back it back if you need to. Or the other way, if you think something's going to have an easy time at the front or is going to travel well, you might back it pre-race and lay it back. There are a million and one ways to do it. And that varies as to, you know, the type of race, the channel it's on. You've got all these things, obviously, in your mind when you're working. How far am I behind? Who's ahead of me in the queue? What can I do? What can't I do? What kind of liquidity is going to be in the market? So there are a lot of factors. But I do think that there's this story out there that's accepted even by racing people. You know, I've spoken to people who clearly know the game and probably know the game a lot better than I do. You play and run. Oh, but why would you do that? And you kind of think, well, because there's money in it. And I do think there's a, you know, don't enter these waters. But it's, again, to give another high-profile One Dawn approach of Jim Bolger's a few years ago, won the Guineas, started, I think, about 5-4 for the Derby. Pulled like absolute stink in the race. And every pundit and commentator to a man, when it was, you know, falling out the back of the telly after the race, would say, and of course, if you back Dawn Approach, you knew after 5 furlongs, couldn't possibly win, you know, had absolutely no chance, you were tearing it, couldn't possibly. And yet, for the first mile, you could have laid as much as you wanted. I don't think it went bigger than 5-2 before they turned into the straight. And yet, you know, and clearly there's a bit of, you often get a, you knew that couldn't possibly win, there's a bit of after timing. That's sadly a bit inevitable within running betting. You don't know what's going to happen and what the prices are going to be. So any story you have, by definition, has to be kind of, oh, what a price that was, after timing. But yeah, as I say, the world and his wife claimed they knew that couldn't possibly win at halfway. And yet, you know, there was plenty of money to lay at short prices. And those kind of opportunities are out there. Clearly, Duvan, Dawn Approach, these are kind of high profile things that people would know about. But I think it does give you an idea. And the point I made about Duvan, if you've got a really short priced horse that isn't going well, you, where is that line? Where does a fives on shot go in running? And you can't say that it's a right or a wrong price. Clearly, you know, Duvan should have been any price you like, given what happened. But, you know, horses sometimes drift wildly from long odds on to odds against and then go and win in running. So there's no, you know, definitive answer, and like anybody, you know, I've taken plenty of hits and bloody noses in my time, and plenty of setbacks. You're not going to be right all the time, but I do genuinely believe that in running betting offers opportunities that you just don't get from a normal market.
People do love to hear about disasters, so any particular ones that you can think of where you really did come a cropper?
Oh, plenty. Off the top of my head, again, to keep them fairly high profile, last year's champion bumper, Feyenoord. I had laid pre-race with bumper horses, you know a bit about them, particularly the good ones, but you know, there's not a great deal of evidence to go on. My thinking was that although there was undoubtedly talent there, that it might be, you know, a galloping type and might not have the pace of one or two. And in the hurly-burly, suddenly going into 20-odd runners at Cheltenham, what have you, that those horses can come and get lost in it. It's very hard to kind of dominate that type of race. So I'd laid it for a good chunk beforehand. And as the tapes went up, it went sideways. So rather than trying to be prominent, as I'm sure they'd hoped, it ended up not just last, but detached at the back of the field. And all the way around, you know, I could have got out at 20, 30. It never went crazy prices. If it had gone to 500-1, I would have had a fiver on to, you know, take the stress out of it. But all the way around, I could have got out at any price. And even coming down the hill when it was going well, you think you've still got the whole field to pass. There's ones in front of you from, you know, all the top stables. Mullen's got a few, Henderson. They've all had the run of the race. They're sitting ready to go off that bend. You're not going to, even when it started cutting through, you're not going to get the four or five in front. And then you have that moment of, and you fall to the pit of your stomach and you realise you've done the lot. So, yeah, and that was from just a sense of you can't, not in a champion bumper, you can't come from that and happy to, you know, that's not going to happen. Rather than give a bit back, I'll have all of that. And ultimately you pay the price. And then that's probably the other facet of what I do. You have the mind games, because Cheltenham obviously is a huge thing for everybody. It's a huge thing for me, not only for the fun of it, but the great racing, the liquidity in the markets. It's a big week when you hope to do well. So to take a huge hit like that, then the mental side of it comes in, and how you react to that. I often liken it to kind of other sports. If you think, I watch a lot of American football, and the great quarterbacks, as well as the the obvious ability they've got, a lot of it is mental, and they treat each particular play, what's the best thing I can do here, what's the best result from this moment, knowing that if they get all the little bits right in the long run, that's going to give them the best result. So rather than I've just done the lot, right, what's the next race, let's have that back, it's very hard to do. But to have that mindset of, right, the best way to get that back and then some more is to play every race, you know, in cricket you might say that they'll treat every ball on its merits. And the temptation, as I say, is just to think, right, I'm going to have that back. And then, of course, you can dig yourself a far deeper hole. But doing it, you know, as I say, 7 days a year, 300 and plenty days a year, there's going to be plenty of opportunity, which doesn't mean it's sometimes hard not to rein it in. And certainly if I look at my results, one big minus, there's quite often another big minus not too far behind, because it is hard to, you know, I've just lost a load, I'm going to start by getting a tiny bit back and another tiny. It's not always easy, but I know that's the way to do it.
What would your advice be to anybody watching this? They're thinking, hang on a minute then, maybe I can have a go at this. What do you need to be successful doing what you do from home?
Well, you need to know what you're doing. I mean, I wouldn't, you know, pretend, come on in, have a go, it's easy, you know, it's a license to print money. It's not. I guess the message would maybe be that if you think you've got a talent for race reading, that it's maybe not as impossible as you've heard. And try it with small stakes. I mean, Betfair taking what, £2 bets, do it for small stuff. But realise, you've always got to realise where you are in the food chain. As I say, if you're watching on at the races, you are 7 seconds behind other people with all the equipment. There's no point in, you know, trying to do something inside the final furlong. But if you're, yeah, race reading, I don't know, I've talked about high profile stuff. If you're watching a sprint handicap at Pontefract, say, you know, you've got a horse that's won its last couple, but it's in a tight handicap, it's up in the weights, it's had an easy lead in small fields for those, and it goes off, I don't know, 5-1 joint favourite in a 15 runner field. It's used up loads of petrol out wide, it's knocked up to the front, it's trapped wide, it's still taking a pull. You know, it's no longer 5-1, it's any price you like. And the market suddenly takes a while to react to that. As I say, there are moments almost when the market, okay, well, this was 5-1, it's not going well, maybe it's 7-8, well, it's not, it's 20, 25, 50-1, it's any price you like. So yeah, if race reading is your thing, then have a go, start small and see if it works out. But do always be aware, as I say, I'm not saying that it's not true, it's a level playing field, it's not. There are things stacked against you, but they don't have to be insurmountable. You know, if I was racing Usain Bolt and, you know, he was giving me a couple of seconds over 10 metres, I'd be very confident. Over 100 metres, I'm sure he'd be pretty confident. As long as you know where you are and what you're up against and what you're trying to do, then, you know, there are things that can be overcome. But you're not going to do it obviously beating the quick pick boys. If you're trying to do what the majority of them trying to do, you know, they're coming up to the line, that one's going to win. That's not going to happen. You need more subtlety. But that doesn't mean, you know, that it can't be done.
Okay, once again, I'm in rural Devon with Matt Mantle, as I've been told Matt it is, previously Matthew, when we were talking. It's been 8 months since we did the last clip, and considering that Matt was probably unknown to most people at that time, it was a very successful, very popular video, and by popular demand, we've been asked to do a part two, maybe see if Matt can elaborate on some of the things he talked about previously. Just to recap, Matt bet in running from home on satellite pictures from rural Devon and makes it pay to the extent that he pays the premium charge. Thanks again, Matt, for agreeing to talk to us. I think it's been 8 months since we last spoke. How's it been going?
Okay, it's probably been quite a, certainly this summer has been quite tricky. Summer tends to be a harder time of year. I think quite a lot of in-running players find high summer tough. I think firmer ground, smaller fields, people away on holiday for lack of liquidity and things like that. And I think this year with the kind of drought summer has emphasised all of that, and the World Cup as well. So it's the summer months are always tricky, and they've probably been even trickier this year. But yeah, with the usual ups and downs, it's okay.
I think it's safe to say that when I posted your video last time, the first video, quite a few people were incredulous before they even clicked on, and there was quite a bit of Twitter that can't happen, blah blah blah. And then I think once they actually saw what you had to say or heard what you had to say, they were convinced that. But a lot of people sort of say you're a little bit vague, probably understandably, you don't want to give all your secrets away. But can you give us a little bit more information, what you're actually looking for? Can you elaborate on a few things that might happen in a race that other people might not take much notice of, that you sort of think is critical to that race?
Well, I think just about everything is important in a race. I tend to have a picture before a race of what I expect to happen. You know, this one will lead, these one will maybe chase the leaders, those will be held up, ones that might travel easily, ones that might race too freely, ones that might need riding along. And then you're kind of, I think that's the beauty of punting in running, is that as soon as the stalls open or the tapes go up, everything changes. It's almost like a different thing to bet on. So you have a picture, this is what people are expecting pre-race, and certainly that forms the basis of maybe what I'm thinking about doing. But then as soon as the race is off, then you know that can go out of the window. So if something that normally travels well isn't traveling well, something that's needed scrubbing along is traveling more kindly, something that's pulling that hasn't, all these things change the dynamic. And there are so many, racing is not, you know, mathematical to working out what horse is going to win. There's no definitive answer, but there are lots of tiny little pieces, the quality of the horses involved, the weights, the going, the pace, the draw, all kinds of things that make up what will happen at the end. And you can only assess so many of those pre-race. And once the race starts, you know, you in some ways you're starting from scratch. So I guess what I'm looking for in the early stages is anything that differs from kind of my pre-race vision, if you like, of how the race will go. And then you work from there. And then, of course, you've got to make very quick choices as to what these things that you weren't expecting to see, what they mean. You know, do they increase a horse's chances? Do they decrease them?
So you mentioned that you've got an idea of how a race is going to pan out. You must put a fair bit of prep in then to try and work out each race prior to betting on it.
To an extent, yes, but you have a fair knowledge of a large number of horses, their running styles and things like that. So it's really a question of putting that together in a particular race. You might have a lot of front runners, you might have no pace, things like that. And that gives you, as I say, I start off with a rough picture of what I'm expecting from a race, and then alter my position depending on how things pan out once the race actually starts.
Can you be a little bit more specific? I mean, people might say, well, that's all very well, but you're not really telling us much. Can you tell us something that you might see in the early stages of a race which makes you think that can't win, that others might miss?
Well, there are a lot of things. I think
a little knowledge can be dangerous in this type of thing. I think most people who watch any racing would have an idea of what are good signs, what are bad signs. You know, if a jockey isn't doing a lot, a horse is traveling easily, that's a good sign. If it's having its head scrubbed off, that's a bad sign. But there are many subtleties within that. And I guess getting down to fine-tuning, that maybe is an area in which I have an advantage, is in understanding, having watched different jockeys, to use a couple of famous people for libel reasons who have retired. Richard Hughes and Kieran Fallon would have very different riding styles. One of them much more quiet, would get horses to travel for him. One who always seemed to be chivvying along, asking horses to go quicker than they wanted to be. It's a question to a large extent of riding styles. So Richard Hughes sat there motionless, Kieran Fallon just nursing one along, could mean a very similar thing in terms of what a horse has got to give, but would give a very different appearance to somebody just watching the race.
Okay, now we'll go on to this, the jockeys. I mean, do you take notice of horses that have drifted alarmingly before a race? And are there, watching as many races that you do, are there any jockeys riding a horse that might have been an alarming drifter that does something you might think, doesn't look too busy today?
You can have things like that in the back of your head. I try not to get too tied to them, because you don't know unless you're involved. You might have a horse that has drifted alarmingly, is a prominent racer, drawn one at Chester, and then is slowly away, and you think, well, what a surprise. Yeah, the market knew that was coming. But equally, somebody in my position would be very foolish to think that's obviously what's going to happen, assume that's going to happen, and then it pings, gets the rail, and is a fifth of the price it was. And so I tend to rely on what I see. I would have the market in the back of my head, with debutant maybe who seems weak in the market, it might suggest that it's going to be given maybe an educational ride, or today's not the day. You'd have things like that in your head, but I wouldn't get too tied to them as an idea. Drifters, as the forum will tell you, do occasionally win.
I know it's obviously very a rare occurrence, and we all know that racing pretty much is straight, but occasionally you do see a horse that's, there's fortunes to lay almost as soon as it comes out the stalls or jumps off. Would you take special notice of that, or has that come into your previous answer?
I think probably it comes under the previous answer. Your natural inclination, if you see a large amount to lay one in running, what do they know that I don't? But I think it would be foolish for somebody just to go on that kind of information. I pretty well go on what I see. It's that there are, to extrapolate that out, that there are some famous in-running carnage ones where commentators have called the wrong horse and people have laid huge prices. Well, if whoever's laying is just going on their own eyes rather than what they're being told, then that doesn't happen. And so, I might have the market and things like that in my head, or what other people have put up as lay bets. I just tend to focus on what I'm thinking about and what I want to do.
Okay, one of the questions I didn't ask you, which is one of the basics people ask about, what system do you use? What interface do you use and why?
I use Grus. I use it. I was an absolute dinosaur for a lot of years when I started doing this. I kind of was self-taught in terms of the Betfair side of things, and I was tapping away with fingers and thumbs and entering bets manually. And I did that even when I was full-time. I still did that for several years until I spent a day with somebody whose opinion I respected, who said, please just give this a try. And I did, and then of course very quickly realised, why didn't I do this years ago? So Grus makes my life a lot easier. There are many things within it that I simply don't use because I'm not very technologically minded, but just having everything in custom boxes at one click away. Fill or kill is something that's very useful to me. You set a time limit for a bet and you submit it. And then if it's not taken within a certain period of time, then it's taken out of the system. That in my old fingers and thumbs days, I would leave a price in there and they thought, well, I don't want to lay it now. And of course it's too late, the price is gone by then. So things like that, the one click side of it, the custom boxes, the fill or kill, it definitely helps me a lot. It's frankly incredible value. It's about £6 a month and it's worth a lot more than that to me. Yeah.
Okay, now going back to your preparation, do you watch reruns after days racing and think, ah, that's where I went wrong, or I missed that there, or that's why that didn't win, or that's how that got up?
I do. I'm not an avid. I won't sit and, you know, watch the whole evening's racing that I've just sat through in the afternoon. I don't do that on a daily basis, but I certainly will watch replays of races. And certainly if I've had a bad day, if things have gone badly, then yeah, I'll sit down and think, right, what could I have done nothing different there? And often, of course, the answer will be yes. Sometimes, you know, it's just a case of these things happen. But yeah, so more often than not, if things have gone badly, then I will pay them more attention than if they've gone well.
Now, I think most people will accept that the life of a professional gambler can be extremely stressful. It's not a job you can necessarily switch off of. And I know you've got a young family. How do you juggle family? And previously when we talked, you said you work 7 days a week very regularly. How do you manage to juggle a family life with the stresses and strains and time, you know, being a professional gambler?
Well, I guess there's a payoff. On the one hand, I do 7 days a week, but being in running betting, I do some prep at the beginning of the day, but, you know, I don't really have to start work till lunchtime normally, so my mornings are free. So although I'm doing 7 days a week, I've got free time, I've got my evenings free. I also work from home, which gives, you know, a lot of freedom. So it's a question of, yeah, juggling those kind of things. And 90% of the time it works out okay. Yeah, if children are running into the office in the middle of, you know, a particularly tense couple of furlongs when there's a lot on the line, then the tempers can get frayed. But yeah, on the whole, we managed to work it quite well.
Now, you didn't say last time what sort of figures you bet to. I can understand why, but people are sort of interested. So just give us a rough idea. I mean, do you try and aim to win a certain amount per race or per day? Or have you got, you know, a certain amount you would click to? And is there scope to get bigger and bigger infinitum? Or is there a point where you have to accept that this is as big as it's going to get for you?
In terms of the amount, I certainly don't. I have a rough amount of, you know, today's racing looks good, you know, that would be a reasonable figure. But I think it's very dangerous to think, right, I want to make this. You have to treat it as it comes. So some days will look better than others. And certainly, you know, at the Cheltenham Festival, I'll have higher expectations than I would for, you know, an all-weather card in January. But yeah, you can't force things. You can have an idea of what you want to do, and similar things apply to the bigger, better racing. There is more liquidity, so I would have bigger exposures. I would certainly be happy to lay things for, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 at big races where you know the horses, you know the time delay, you know the money in the market. Whereas I certainly wouldn't do anything like that for kind of run-of-the-mill weekday cards. So yeah, there's a variable there. And it varies also. I talked at the beginning about how this summer has been tough. It depends on the type of race. A lot of this summer has been kind of chiseling away with really small amounts. If you're watching a mile and a half, five runner handicap at Yarmouth on firm ground, no offence Yarmouth, everybody's watching the same five horses, nothing much is happening, it's ATR, so I know I'm a long way behind, you'd be daft to risk, you know, big exposures on that kind of thing. So with the exception of the big meetings, Goodwood, Ascot, York next week, during the summer it is more of a grind. But if you're working 7 days a week, you know, there are what, at least 20 races most days, I would think, you don't need a huge, obviously you're not going to win on it on every race, but if you're making small amounts on a regular basis on each race, then that adds up. So in a long answer to the question, there are different variables. You know, there will be big wins and big losses when I'm happy to, you know, take the plunge at big meetings and with big liquidity. Sometimes it's more run-of-the-mill stuff and it's more chiseling away with bits and bobs that, you know, hopefully will add up over time.
So would you see every race as a potential profit, no matter how small? So, for example, a three runner novice hurdle with a five on shot, would you think a cup of tea, or would you think, oh, I might be able to nick a fiver off of this somewhere?
I'm pretty bad for being able to resist. Quite often it'll be to really small stakes. But yeah, most races, if I'm honest, if I'm working, I have an interest in most races. Yeah, and some will be scaled right back, but I do play most races if I'm on a working day.
Now, you mentioned to me when we were chatting before that you have given people advice. People have sort of sat down with you for a couple of hours, don't want to get involved. And you've also mentioned that little knowledge is a dangerous thing. So can you give people that watch, they've watched you now for the second time and they're thinking, no, I really think I can have a go at this, some advice for people that want to take it seriously?
Well, that the little knowledge is a dangerous thing is quite appropriate, I think. I certainly remember watching, because a few people have kind of sat in and you know, I'd like to watch this and have a go. And I remember a horse called Captain Scooby, who was a sprint handicapper of recent years, always outpaced. And basically what he needed was a pace collapse. Leaders go off too quickly, he'll be punched and kicked and shoved the whole way, and if they collapse, then he'll come through, and you know, if it's his day and he's weighted accordingly, then he'll pick up the odd race, and that's how he wins his race. And I was watching this with a friend of mine who was trying to do this, and this was a little five runner handicap at Hamilton, I think, and they got to about 2 furlongs out, and Captain Scooby was just behind the leaders going nicely enough. And he kind of had this in his head: Captain Scooby, always punched and kicked along, always miles behind, there's 2 furlongs to go, it's a certainty. Whereas I was sat there laying it, thinking, if Captain Scooby's sat there traveling nicely, they've gone absolutely no gallop, they're just gonna quicken away from him at the two pole. And he really, you know, but. And so, yeah, it's not as simple as, you know, Richard Hughes is sat there, it's going to win. Kieran Fallon's shoving away, it's not going to... a little knowledge can be a dangerous thing. And I've, watched thousands and thousands of horse races. And that doesn't stop me getting it wrong on an hourly, if not daily basis. It is dangerous, I think, I understand this, I know this. There are pitfalls out there, even when you think you know what you're looking at.
So you would advise people to, it's just a case of experience, really.
Yeah, I mean, I said in the last interview, I was hooked on racing when I was about 11, I think. So from a really early age, I was watching. My older brother got me into it. And that's another point I spoke earlier about, all the little things that go to make up a race. We used to watch races on an old VHS video recorder. He'd come in from work and I'd come in from school, which isn't a good thing to admit, but we'd watch the racing together. And if it was a 3 mile hurdle, he'd go, oh, was it a circuit? Yeah, fast forward. So we don't need it. Whereas I think, no, I want it, because I'd want to see every little tiny bit, right? How did they jump the first? What's that? And that was from quite an early age, I think, understanding that little tiny bits make up the outcome.
I suppose you wouldn't object to a whole load of new people having a go from home with all that extra liquidity?
Well, extra liquidity is always good. But again, as I said last time, you can bet in £2, can't you? So yeah, I think it would be wrong to say, yeah, you know, this is a piece of cake, jump on in. But if you think it's something that you can do, then give it a go. But I would, again, over the years, people who have not only watched, but other people, both in racing and particularly in poker, when poker had an explosion. I think you've got to be true to yourself. You've got to keep good records, and you've got to be honest. They quite often say, I think I'm going to give this poker a go because look, I won that tournament. I did well there. Oh, I'd had a few that night, so we'll ignore that. Well, no, you can't ignore that. You've got to look at every bit and by all means, you know, learn from the things you've done wrong and eradicate the mistakes. But I think there's forget about it. Yeah, that one, I wouldn't do that again. You've got to, if you're doing it properly, record absolutely everything that you do, and your figures need to be 100% pure and honest. That would be a key piece of advice, I think.
Okay, Matt Mantle, thank you very much.
No problem.
StarSports.bet provide the complete betting experience. Find us online via our website and app, on course, and at our flagship betting shop in London's Mayfair. 18 years and older only. BeGambleAware.org.